How long? Someone tell me how long.
You're listening to WhoRadio.com, voice of the International African Revolution.
Uhuru, and it's time now for Reparations in Action here on uhururadio.com, the weekly program of the African People's Solidarity Committee on the Uhuru Radio Network, the online voice of the International African Revolution. The African People's Solidarity Committee is the organization of white people working under the leadership of the African People's Socialist Party in solidarity with the African Liberation Movement. We begin by expressing our appreciation to the African People's Socialist Party and Uhuru Radio for giving us this hour every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time to bring the message of African self-determination and reparations into the white community as we work to build a mass movement for reparations to African people. Today we'll be hearing an interview from 2009 in which African People's Solidarity Committee Chairwoman Penny Hess talks with Mohawk leader Tanitha Horn, the editor of the Mohawk Nation News, about the true history of Thanksgiving, the European genocide against the indigenous people and theft of the land, and why white people must stand in solidarity with African and indigenous people in their struggle to reclaim their land, resources, and destiny. So join us now as we discuss why we don't celebrate Thanksgiving.
The organization of white people that was formed by the African People's Socialist Party that leads the Uhuru movement, working for the liberation of Africa and African people wherever they have been dispersed all around the world. Today we have a very, very exciting and very important guest and show. I'm very, very happy about it. We have from the Mohawk Nation News, Gahadaneta Horn, who is the editor of that newspaper, and we're going to be talking about today why we don't celebrate Thanksgiving. I think this is a really important topic as we get into the so-called holiday that we have in a few days from now, that is basically a celebration of genocide, of the genocide of the indigenous people of this land. And as we always say in the Uhuru movement, we always begin events and presentations by saying that this land belongs to the indigenous people today. So I want to welcome Gahadaneta Horn. Thank you very, very much for being with us today.
Ego, Skanagowa. How are you?
Very well. How are you today?
Good.
Great. I'm looking forward to the discussion that we can have today, because I feel that this whole question of Thanksgiving being, quote, thankful for genocide, for the theft of people's land, and what that still means today, in the past and today, is something that has to be at the forefront of everything that we do. I'd like to begin by asking you a little bit about yourself. I was reading on your website that you have, it seems like your entire life, you have been dedicated to struggling for the liberation of indigenous people. Tell us a little bit about your history.
Well, I've lived most of my life in the Ganawage community, which is part of the Mohawk Territory, which encompasses the Great Lakes watershed, the St. Lawrence River, down to New York State, Vermont, and we've never given up any of our land. We never surrendered any of it, and from the time I was very, very young, I learned that we have to maintain our sovereignty, and we have to do whatever we have to do in order to make the world know, let the world know that we never gave up any of it, and that the squatting on our land of foreign corporations It's totally illegal, and it's and they continue to commit genocide against us in order to try and get their roots into our land. But they can never do it because the land is ours, because we're part of the land. You destroy the land, you have to destroy us, because we're part and parcel of it.
Yes.
The land is who we are. And that, for that reason, they have to destroy all of us, which they tried to do in the beginning, killing off about 115 million of us, which is the biggest Holocaust in all humanity. So this is something that is very, very hidden. And I have never seen a monument to that.
No.
There certainly is a lot of information out there, a lot of books written on it, tons of books, Stolen Continents and 1491 mm-hmm. by Anne. There's the book A Little Matter of Genocide. And there's a lot of books on that.
The American Holocaust is
called the American Indian Holocaust.
Yes, that's right. Well, I wanted to ask you a little bit about also, in the 1960s, you were part of the movement to block the International Bridge. Just tell us a little bit about that as well.
Well, that was that was the first time that anything went out internationally where any Native people were resisting anything, because we were pretty well kept quiet, and the North American, or we call it Turtle Island, establishment wanted to keep us hidden. But suddenly we decided that we were going to make ourselves and make our plight known. But before that, there was something done in 1923 and 1924 by Descahe, who went over to Europe to make an application for the Six Nations Iroquois Confederacy to join the League of Nations. And anyway, after getting the support of seven nations, the U.S. and Canada and Britain together did everything they could to put pressure on those countries so that they eventually withdrew their support, and then they made it illegal for any indigenous people to take our situation outside of the states that have been placed on our lands. So what they did was they corralled us. And for example, if you're an indigenous person living in Canada, you had to go through all of the domestic courts and the domestic, the Supreme Court, all the way up. You had to use up all of the systems that are involved within the nation before you could get it out into the international arena. And the same is it's the same situation in the United States. So this is what happened as a result of what Descahe had done. In 1968, we were constantly being stopped from crossing the border with our goods, and this is our right, not under the Jay Treaty, but it's our inherent right, because Turtle Island is indigenous land, and those borders that have been placed there are what we call the imaginary borders. And they are really meant just for the foreigners, not for us.
Yes.
So they continued to try to enforce that border on us, and we continued to fight it. So and then they were grabbing our stuff, groceries and things at the border. Finally, we just had enough, and we went out there and stopped all the traffic from passing between the United States and Canada at the International Bridge, which is right. At Aguazasne, and Aguazasne is a community that is on is within two countries, so-called, you know, corporations called Canada and the United States, and three others called New York State, Ontario, and Quebec. So you have five colonial jurisdictions impinging on one community. So they've always made it very, very difficult for us. So finally, you know, we just decided one day to put a stop to it. So we did. So they sent in so many police, and they marched in on us, arrested us all, most of us. There was the Cornwall City Police, there was Ontario Provincial Police, New York State Troopers were standing by, the Border Patrol, there was Canada Customs, U.S. Customs, National Guard, everybody was waiting to come in on us. Anyway, we did get arrested, we were taken into Cornwall, and they dropped all the charges from everyone except one person. You know who that was?
You?
Me. I was actually charged with beating up 23 policemen and carrying a concealed weapon.
Oh, please.
Yes.
And did you go to prison for that?
Well, I got off both. Well, I was in jail, and then I got out. There were two separate trials, and I won both of them.
That's powerful.
Yeah, I won both, but it wasn't easy. It was very, very hard. I had no money. I was young. I was in my 20s, if you can imagine doing stuff like that in your 20s.
Yes.
Well, one of the things that happened was it was the first time that anything like that had been had happened and had made the news, international news. So I was invited down to New York City to appear on the Today Show. And so I was interviewed about it, and that raised some pretty big issues. And to this day, there was a film made of it called You Are on Indian Land, and the people there always see it. They show it to their children. They show resistance, and it's always in the minds of those children as they grow up. They know that we resisted 40 years ago.
That's powerful. I'd like to see that film. Is there a website that you can find that?
You can get it from the National Film Board.
National Film Board of Canada.
Yeah.
That's good to know because people do have to see that, because the struggle is going on, and like you're saying, the 1960s was a time of powerful upheaval and the struggle of the indigenous people, African people in this country, and people all over the world, and it was powerful to see the struggles back in the 60s and the 70s. But I know that in the 1990s there was a really powerful struggle in Canada of the Mohawk. We saw pictures of it in the newspaper, I think, of the indigenous people fighting against tanks, or I just remember being very impressed by that. Is that what you call the Oka crisis?
We call it the Mohawk Oka crisis of 1990. And what happened was the municipality of Oka decided they were going to make a golf course over our burial grounds and ceremonial site. And we said no. We wouldn't allow it. So we blocked a dirt road, and this was at Gunnazadagi, which is the Mohawk community right next to the white community of Oka. Anyway, finally, the Quebec Provincial Police came in there with the military part of the Quebec Provincial Police, and they opened fire on us. We were, our people were at the at a fire, and up about 5 o'clock in the morning. There were little kids there, and the women were up. The women were up, making a fire, burning tobacco, and doing the usual, thanking creation, and the children were up. The 2-year-olds were there, playing on their tricycles. All of a sudden, they came up the hill, and they had police cars, and they had these cubes full of weapons and body bags and you name it.
Mm-hmm.
Came up, and they started shooting so there was a lot of gunfire, and right into the trees, and we still say they aimed it at our people because of the bullet holes in the trees were at shoulder level.
Yes.
Anyway, so what happened was one of their own policemen was shot and killed. He was a sniper. He was up in the tree, and suddenly, boom, he falls. Anyway, in the end, it turned into a huge, huge, what they called a revolution. Well, it was a resistance on our part.
Yes.
And so they sent in, we got surrounded. Three of our communities got surrounded. We're all about an hour apart from each other. There was Ganawage and Aguzasne and Ganazadage. Now, Ganawage is right across from Montreal, and there's a bridge where about 60,000, 70,000 people drive in every day to go to work from the bedroom communities. And our people just shut it down and said we had to do something to save the lives of the people up at Ganazadage. Anyway, eventually the army was dispatched. We got surrounded by thousands of soldiers. They brought in all their tanks, all their weaponry, everything. And they brought it around Ganawage, and they also brought it around Aguzasne. So three of our communities were under siege, and it lasted for 78 days. They stopped food from coming in. We ended up having no gas, and eventually, you know, our food was running out. We had non-native people trying to bring food in and risking their lives. And anyway, this went on for 78 days.
That was a powerful resistance and really courageous. And I know that people knew about that all over the world. And it, you know, and it just keeps raising the question that this land is the indigenous people's land. And stolen land never becomes the property of the thief. It always remains it's the land of the indigenous people, and that doesn't go away, and that kind of resistance is going to continue. It's just really an honor to be able to talk to you today. We're going to take some calls in a little bit, but I just want to ask you a couple more questions, and then we're going to open up the phone lines, because one of the lies that the conquerors, the invaders from Europe, use is that this land was empty, that nobody was here, and they use that in Africa too, and it's completely, of course, it's completely a lie. But tell us a little bit about how it was in the Americas. Well, of course, it wasn't called the Americas in Turtle Island and in the Caribbean. What was life like? I know that there were no problems with the environment when the indigenous people owned this land. There was no ozone level and pollution and that kind of thing, and there was no police brutality or mass prisons and the kind of thing that we see today. So tell us a little bit about what life was like.
Well, first of all, you're right. Africa, there was a big genocide in Africa as well.
Yes.
And on Turtle Island, which we call Onuarege, there were hundreds of nations. We all knew of each other. We had agreements that we call Turo agreements, which is a concept where you have two nations like the Mohawks and the Cayugas, for example, agreeing to live side by side in peace and not to interfere, but to help each other in a crisis, or if there's a war or whatever, you know, if something like that happened, if there was some kind of peace, breakage of the peace, then we would help each other. So we had made these agreements with we had formed the Confederacy, which is made up of Onondaga, Mohawk, Oneida, Cayuga, Seneca, and later the Tuscaroras joined. And we agreed, you know, to stand by each other. And we have a law called the Guyana de Goa, the Great Law of Peace, which, if anyone cares to study it, it's pretty comprehensive. It's based on, it's an egalitarian system where everyone has a voice. And that's just the way our minds are, because it's all based on our relationship with the natural world, because we're part of the natural world. So we study nature, and we actually managed to put it into a structure that we could use to develop our minds. And I have to say that throughout my life, I've always gone back to that in order to find answers to many of the questions and many of the problems that have come my way. But that was, and I think that this relationship with the natural world and with other peoples is something that probably exists among all indigenous people, not just us. Mm-hmm. So we form these, ties and, with other indigenous people. Perhaps maybe 300 of the nations had agreements with us. So when the invasion happened, we had already, we were coexisting very well. We had our territories, and we moved around on our own territories. We had all kinds of agreements. And we were ready to really traverse further south and form these relationships with the other indigenous nations in Central and South America, in all of the Americas. We knew of each other because we met maybe every 25 years or so, from what I understand, and stayed and exchanged ideas and talked with each other down in the southwest, up in that area. So I think that the Europeans came, had we been left alone, I think we would have completed that.
Yes.
But Europeans came, and they were a different kind of people. We watched them, and we thought, well, maybe we could include them as a nation that could, as part of the Turo concept. But we watched them, and we found that they really were a different kind of people. And we tried to make the same kind of relationship with them. We did. And it was called the Turo, but it was also called the Silver Covenant Chain. And we made these with the Dutch and the British, the other nations that came here, the French. We formed these relationships, but they violated them because they didn't really...
Yes.
They didn't really understand egalitarianism. They didn't really understand that people were actually equal. Because their system was based on a command and obey system, a hierarchy, where some king was the boss or the queen was the boss, and they're there for forever and ever, no matter what they do, and so on. This was totally not part of our thinking, and still isn't. It is not our thinking. So there, that was the clash. That was the big clash. And we didn't go along with it. We didn't understand it. We didn't understand. We only thing we understood was that they were really, really nasty people.
Yes. I think that, history just shows that is completely reality. That, like you're saying, that most of the people, not only in this hemisphere, but in the world, see the world as you're describing it. And this idea that a single human being or even a government could own land, could own property, I think is something that is not a concept that most of the people in the world can even imagine. And I think that this ownership, it contributed to building a system that benefits the white world by committing genocide and enslaving other people and stealing their land and stealing their resources. And the kind of world that you described existed with the the Confederacy that you talked about. I mean, can you imagine if we had a world like that today, if we had that as the dominant ideas, we wouldn't see the suffering in Iraq and the poverty and the suffering that we see around the world.
Well, the thing is that the whole basis of that, whether it's commercial or whatever you want to call it, is based on the fact that a few people own people.
Yes.
Actually own the people, and they can dispense with them as they please. They can manipulate them. They can start wars and get them to kill each other off. They can get rid of useless eaters. They can put up walls and force people to try to get through them and then kill them. So this is the idea, is that they're deep down, they feel that they own people. But it's not all of the white people. It's not. It is a small class of oppressors. And they want to own mankind. They want to own the world. And it is a few people that are doing this. Now, recently, Chavez was at a meeting down in Santiago, and it was an Ibero meeting, and he's indigenous, and the Prince Juan Carlos of Spain,
yes,
got very annoyed at him when Chavez said, you were put in by a fascist. I was elected by the people. So these are the kind of people who, mm-hmm, told him to shut up. He has no right to speak, and they tried to shut him up. But this is the kind of people. It's only a few people in the world, and they have this unwieldy control through the use of weaponry and fear. And they have a lot of different mechanisms to create this fear in people. And they've been very successful at it. And they're using money. Of course, the money is all based on using our people, our land, our resources.
That's right.
As the collateral to prop up their money. That's how they put up us. They put us up as the collateral in order to raise money from the public, in order to put in these industries that pollute our land and so on. This is what they're doing all over the world. And when they're done with us, when they don't need us, they're just going to kill us. And we're not going to let that happen, are we?
No, I know with the resistance and with the growing movement around the world, and it is really powerful to see the kind of stand that Hugo Chavez is taking. Almost every day you read about him in the news, and he's fearless and really, you know, tells the truth, and it's powerful to see.
Well, you know what was good about what he did?
What?
Well, they told him to shut up, and he wouldn't.
They had to turn off his mic.
Now, that's not happened before, because people they've designed a protocol where you can't do that, where you can't say, shut the hell up, you know?
Right.
Like if the governor general, you know, decided that she was going to impose some rule on me, there's a protocol that I can't talk to her. I have to kiss her hand. Well, I'm not that kind of a person. I think she's a black woman from Haiti, and she's my equal, except that she's got this position where she serves her masters, who are these European oligarchs, princesses and whatever, you know, that want to control the world, and they use people like her. And she goes right along with it.
Yes, in the Uhuru movement, it's called neo-colonialism. The people that, you know, carry out the work of white power, basically. Well, I wanted to ask you as well to talk a little bit about, I mean, there's so many stories, so many examples of the genocide against the indigenous people. And I think it's really important, as Chairman Omali Ashitela, who's the leader of the Uhuru movement, has pointed out, the word genocide didn't even exist in the English language until the 1940s, when basically white people, Europeans, killed other Europeans in Europe. But when, you know, Europeans were slaughtering indigenous people and African people and peoples around the world, there was no word, there was not even a word for that. And I would just like to ask you to talk a little bit about what are some of the things that happened that the Europeans carried out against the indigenous people.
Well, in order to rid the Americas of indigenous people, they employed every means they could and continue to do so. And one of them was to kill us off. And then that didn't work because some of us escaped. And then there was, smallpox, blankets, diseases. So they used germ warfare on us.
Yes.
And then they pushed us onto little plots of land, and they completely controlled our every move. And then they took our children away from us to destroy our society by putting our children in residential schools. And this is something that has come home to roost here in Canada, where you have Kevin Annett. He's a reverend who was working at a church in Alert Bay in British Columbia. And he kept hearing these stories about these killings of Indian children, Native children, and finally he looked into it, and he was horrified to find out it was true. So in that area, he's been able to find that about 50% of the children were killed off. They actually mm-hmm. killed them. They pushed them, they choked mm-hmm. them, threw them out of windows, they sterilized them, this was done all across Canada. And there was a Dr. Bryce who did a report on it, and then he was fired. He was working for the health department in 1902. And so there are a lot of different strategies. And one of the things that, so this continues, by the way.
It
was only about 9 or 10 years ago that this came out, that these murders took place. We're trying to get the bones of these children back. My own family, my brother's, a woman from Gunasadagi, his aunt, his wife's aunt, she was sent away to a school called Shingwak. They had an electric chair in there. They used to put the kids in an electric chair. And they would, all the other kids watch, and they would put, these taser mm-hmm. things?
Yes.
That's what this was like a precursor to the present-day tasers, but they used to put these children in there and get the other kids to watch while they almost killed these children in these electric chairs. Anyway, this child was taken there, and they never, ever heard from about her or from her ever again. And they could never find out what happened to her. Well, this is very common. This was very, very common of our children disappearing on us. And now we have 500 women, over 500 women, who are called the disappeared, that the police refuse to investigate. And these are women, Indigenous women all over Canada. Amnesty International has taken some action on it, put out some, has started a campaign, and so you have people that are trying to push for investigations into this, and for example, in British Columbia, there was a Native person working in the police, in the policing industry out there. And they would not take reports of these missing women. And they actually had 5,000 reports that they shredded. Mm. So there's some big cover-up happening over here. Something really big is happening.
I've heard a little bit about that, but of course in general, there's nothing in the newspaper about that, and there's nothing at all. Like you're saying, it's a complete cover-up. Before we go on, I would like to open up the phone lines and ask people to call in, and if they have a question for Gaha Dineta. And the phone number is 5707. That's 727-824-5707. Call in and raise your question in this discussion today. I think this is very, very important question, and it's a truth that has to come out. I think we do have a caller. Caller, you're on the air. Caller?
Uhuru.
Uhuru.
Uhuru. My name's Allie, and I'm in the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, African People's Solidarity Committee in Philadelphia. And we're here in our Solidarity Center listening to this program, and I just wanted to call in and, just express such deep appreciation for this interview and for your guest, for your unrelenting stand of resistance. It's just so incredible to hear the continuing resistance of the indigenous peoples. I hate Thanksgiving. I know everybody listening does, because it's such a despicable holiday celebration of genocide. And oftentimes when we say that in the white community, people say, oh, you're spoiling it. They don't want to hear the truth. But listening to your presentation and this interview, it's just so powerful to hear not only the continuing resistance of indigenous people, but also the truth that you're putting out about the fact that the whole society, of indigenous and African people is completely different and was completely different from white and European society.
Hello? Hello?
Can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Oh, okay.
Okay, first, I wanted to say something about the fact that people do not know anything about this, that the reason for it is because of media censorship. Media is corporate media, and there is control and censorship of news. So anything as important as any indigenous resistance is not going to appear in the media. And it will keep the public ignorant of the real issues and of what is happening among indigenous people. And also, your caller referring to resistance, the continued resistance, according to the great law, I have to continue resisting until I win. So I guess I'll never stop. Or I hope maybe I will stop. But it is not just for me or us, the indigenous people. It's for all of us, because we all have to save the earth. And that is the basis of all resistance, is to save Mother Earth. So I am calling on everybody to start committing themselves to, doing something. The old Chinese proverb says, when disaster strikes, the first thing you have to do is get up out of your chair. And that's a proverb that I always tell people about, because I can't tell people what to do. They have to do it themselves. And maybe I should tell you about my recent trip down to Tucson.
I saw about that in your article. Yes, tell us about that.
Well, I received a call to, there was a summit of the Americas on the border issue. So there is an attempt to build a wall on the so-called Mexican-U.S. border. And as you know, this indigenous people traversed that whole area since time immemorial. So now the U.S. Wants to put this wall up to keep the indigenous people out. And up here, we have the same situation, and we understand that a wall is going to be built up here. I know that they started to put up these spy towers up out west. So this big meeting was put on at Tohono O'odham, which spans quite a large area, bigger than Connecticut, I think. The imaginary line goes right through the middle of it. And on one side you have about 30 communities, and on the other side there used to be about 60 communities of Tohono O'odham people. So I got invited down there and 10 of us, about 10 Mohawks went down. And this was about a week ago. So we listened. It was at the community center, and we listened to the people talking about how terrible it is for these people who are crossing, and the deaths and the people dying for a drink of water and being put in cages and then taken over to detention centers and then taken back to the other side, the southern side of the wall. Well, about the first day we said, okay, we have to head back over there and have a look at this border. And there were, you know, people, men, women, and children dying.
Yes.
So anyway, so we decided to, so there were 6 carloads of us. And we drove down there, and it's drive right through the desert, really hot, too. And so we're driving along, and we get followed, of course. And we get up to the border. I couldn't believe what I saw. There were great big huge steel pillars with cement poured into it, 5 feet into the ground and 6.5 feet high, and the next one would be about 4 feet high, and then they were going to put these steel, look like railway ties across the top, and it was, and then every, as far as you could see, they had these posts up right up into the mountain. And all the workers were the construction crews that were there, and the main contractor is Boeing, and I guess these are the subcontractors. They all were packing guns. So I don't know what it was for. Is it to shoot these indigenous people?
Yes, it is.
Who are coming through, you know, on their own land. They're Tohono O'odham people who now are on what they call the Mexican side, who can't even come and visit their relatives.
Yes.
On the so-called U.S. side.
Yes.
So anyway, so we the National Guard showed up, and then the Indian police showed up, and there were all kinds of people, and they all had guns. And then regular, you know, choppers showed up. They started hovering. Well, one was hovering right over us. And then the tribal chairmen, whose name is Marla, what was her last name? there were a lot of war toys around. Let's just say there were lots of guns and lots of ammunition, I guess. Lots of fancy vehicles and machinery. So anyway, so this Marla showed up, and we asked her, you know, can you tell us a little bit about this? And she said, well, we're in favor of it. Well, I was stunned.
Mm.
In favor of this? Oh, yes, we passed it. We agreed to it. We're supporting it. And I said, just how many of your people voted in favor of this? And she said, well, the majority. Well, I said, the majority of who? I know that where I live, there is an imposed similar tribal council called the Band Council that the government puts in. And they're actually tyrannical, and they just do what they please because
mm-hmm.
their bosses are the colonial government. Known as Canada. And
yes.
Down there, this tribal government is the same. They're put in by the U.S. government, and the traditional people are ignored. So anyway, so she said, well, they're in favor of it, and they, you know, and these people come over, and, you know, and we said, and they leave garbage around, and they bang on people's doors for water, and so on and so on. Anyway, so so we said, well, you know, these people are thirsty. They're dying. You know, she says, what people?
Mm.
Said your people. They're your people. And So anyway, so these people are being, you know, given a death sentence by by this Marla and the tribal council. So anyway, we were Mohawks went down there really to present a position on the border, which is for us to make our own passports and our own identification. I mean, that's all they need is ID. Well, we'd be glad to make all they need, you know.
Right.
We'd be glad to put a longhouse right on the border and have them come in, into our longhouse, and we'll give them all the ID they need. And then they can go anywhere they please if that's all that's needed. Why should they die because they don't have a piece of paper? And as a matter of fact, there were two men standing there who one had a piece of paper and the other one didn't. They were both Tohono O'odham people that were that had a meeting with Ned Norris, who is the tribal chairman, and they wouldn't let him through. Some flunkies there said, "Oh, you can't go through you because you know you need to have a visa." You imagine they have to have a visa to go from one, you know, from their own community, from one side to the other. Anyway, so
the land that was stolen from them.
Yes. Anyway, so. We drove eventually, you know, after 45 minutes or so, and I found some handcuffs there lying on the ground, by the way. So I picked them up and I brought them home to remind me of what's going on. So then we drove down the road and we decided to go and look at the spy tower, which is built by Boeing and is being manned by the Israelis. It's a company called Elbit, E-L-B-I-T, which is an Israeli company. Anyway, it's a big, fancy thing. Oh, my God, it's huge. And the only problem with it is it doesn't work. But what we saw was a huge cage where they bring the people and with a cement floor, and they put them in there. And I understand they're very nasty to those people. They will drink water in front of them, pour it on their heads. You know, these are border, you know, the Border Patrol and the other Homeland Security people just to... you know, upset these people, and they put children in there, you know, young children. And then when there are 200 in that cage, they put them in this big whack-and-hut bus and take them over to the detention center. And then they stay there for anywhere from 3 to 6 months, and who knows what they do to them. But they put them through some kind of process. I'm not sure what it is, but your guess is as good as mine. And then they send them back, I suppose, some. And anyway, so then we drove out of there, and we're going along the road. And what do we see? We see 10 people, indigenous people, being rounded up by Border Patrol and a whole bunch of other people. And I said, stop the car. I was in the lead car. There were 6 carloads of us. So we turned around. We went back. We jumped out of the car. We stood on the road, and we... 5 of us, Mohawks, stood there and waved our fists, and we stood in the way, and we started yelling to let those people go, let them go. There were some children. It looked like to me there were 2 families. They looked like they were from, they were Mayans. There were about 3 children, and the rest were adults, and women and men. So... we tried to stop them. We were yelling, you have no right to do this. You're violating international law. This is, and by the way, you know, they and then they pushed them into one of the trucks or the vans. They pushed all 10 into one van. They had several vans there. And we were yelling and saying, let them go, let them go. And we were talking about that this wall was illegal and it violated international law. It violated the law of the Tohono O'odham people, the traditional people. It violated our rights, and they never got our permission to put that up. Anyway, we were yelling and yelling, and they actually got scared of us, even though they had the guns.
Wow.
And then drove away, and they had to drive around us, and we raised our fists in the air for the people to see us as to see our fists in support and in solidarity with them as they drove them away. So that was my recent experience.
That's powerful.
There.
I saw the article on a website, I think Narco News or something like that, the Narcosphere it was on, about that, and it mentioned you, and that is a really powerful stand, and that's another thing that's happening right now that we don't hear hardly anything about. That, you know, this, it's war. We don't have to even look at Iraq. This is a war going on right here on this so-called border of the stolen land. And it's like you're saying, it's never going to work. In the long run, it's never going to work, because I know that there is a movement of indigenous people throughout the entire North and South America to unite as one. And from what I understand, when all of those people are together, then, you know, that's powerful. That's powerful, and that's something that we're going to see in the future.
Well, we need some support.
That's right.
And we have an awful lot of people down there that really are fighting and out there ready with their own toys and with their trigger fingers ready to shoot those people. Like the, what do you call those guys? The Minutemen.
Oh, yes.
That's why there's so many desperate housewives down there.
That's right. But I think
the problem is that media is censoring because they want to stop the consensus of the public. The public is not in favor of this. Not at all. And even though they're saying the public is in favor of the wall, from what I understand, the public is not in favor of that wall.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not only is it inhumane, but it's what it does to the natural life and the natural world. And I would like to see more people help and stop this atrocity and stop these murders of these people. From what I understand, you know, there is poisoning going on of the people down in Mexico by multinational corporations, and these people are fleeing. Babies
yes.
are being born with all kinds of birth defects, and we need to do something. You know, the reports that are out there are biased, and they're being made to make people think that we're all by ourselves, that we're the only ones, that we have no support. And we'd
yes.
like to hear, we'd like people to get up and tell us that they're in support of us. We aren't warmongers. We're not going to hurt anybody.
That's
and
right.
we just want to save our lives and the lives of our people and maybe even your people.
I think you're right. I completely unite with you. And I think that from our point of view, what we're saying is, well, yeah, I mean, it's been the government and the corporations who have done this and led it, but white people have enjoyed the land and the resources and the stolen resources without taking and participated in this, you know, because some of the things that you're talking about on the border are just regular white people. It's not the government. And that, you know, there's apathy, there's complicity, even in just not taking a stand. And I unite with you. It is a stand that we have to take. And we just have a few minutes left, Gahadaneta, and we would really appreciate it if you could put out your website and any information to contact you and the Mohawk Nation News.
Okay, well, the website is Mohawk Nation News, MNN Mohawk Nation News, and the website is www.mohawknationnews.com. MOHAWKNATIONNEWS.com. And Mohawk Nation News is all one word. And my email address is gahandineta2.com. And the spelling is KAHENTINETHA2@ yahoo.com. gahandineta2@yahoo.com.
Well, thank you very, very much for being on this program today. There's so much more to talk about. I hope we can have you on again. Really appreciate the understandings and the experience that you have put out, and just to say that the African People's Solidarity Committee is completely in solidarity with the right of all indigenous people to their land and all their resources. And I want to thank you again, Gahadineta Horn. Thank you for being on the show. Uhuru.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to WhoRadio.com, voice of the International African Revolution. The Uhuru Movement invites you to the 6th Congress of the African People's Socialist Party, December 7th through 11th. 5 days, 3 locations, all in and around St. Petersburg, Florida. This is your chance to hear speakers from around the world, enjoy lectures, a grand banquet, and silent auction with African gifts from many countries. The African People's Socialist Party sprang to life in 1972 in an era of struggle for black power, for justice, and for self-determination. That struggle continues today and is even more urgent. Come and be a part of the largest gathering of freedom-loving African peoples and our allies. Turmoil and crisis reign across the globe. The system we were taught to believe in does not serve us. Colonized peoples on every continent are rising up to reclaim what is ours. The African People's Socialist Party is building a massive organization to unify African people worldwide. The goal being to regain control over the riches of Africa and the wealth that our labor has created. Here in America, where are we safe? In the gated communities? In the hood? In schools? For African people who thought we could make a future for our children inside the system, it's 50 years later, and Malcolm X's words ring truer than ever. The American dream, for us, is an American nightmare. Make plans now to join us for the 6th Congress of the African People's Socialist Party, December 7th through the 11th. 5 days, 3 locations, all in and around St. Petersburg, Florida. For more information, visit APSPUHURU.org. That's APSPUHURU.org. Or call 727-821-6620. That's 727-821-6620. This is your chance to learn more about you. Uhuru.
Hey, Aisha, hold on. I'll walk with you. You know, this is going to be a great class.
I know. Yet I'm still trying to figure out how I can exactly use these skills.
The Uhuru Movement.
The Uhuru Movement?
Yes, the Uhuru Movement. They offer great opportunities to utilize these type of skills in the most meaningful ways. I mean, writers, photography, graphic design, journalism, videography, video editing, even radio broadcasting.
Wow, sounds great. I'm assuming you have to be pretty advanced.
Not at all. I mean, although experienced is welcome, it's not mandatory. You know, the Uhuru Movement, they will train you. Log on and sign up today at uhurunews.com, where your skills are wanted and needed. Whether reporting on local news, writing for an international newspaper, or hosting your own radio show, the Uhuru Movement is the place for you. Do you have a desire to work in sales, marketing, or administration? Do you have the talent for audio engineering? Log on and sign up today, uhurunews.com. Not just explaining the world, but changing the world.
Thank you, brother. I will definitely follow up today.
And hopefully you'll become a member like I am.
Information, ideas, reality. That's what the Burning Spear newspaper offers you each month. Truth about government, society, entertainment, and the world around you. The Burning Spear is the oldest Black Power newspaper in existence, and your one-year subscription is only $25. Get the insight and perspective that the mass media machine cannot and will not deliver. Read dynamic articles on the most pressing issues affecting the lives of African workers in the U.S., Africa, and around the world. Each month, you'll find real political analysis of the crisis of parasitic capitalism, insight into world and local events, and a focus on the realities and struggles in the heart of the hood, expressing the vision and voice of the African working class. Uncompromising truth, unwavering focus. The Burning Spear newspaper. This is Black Power in the 21st century. Subscribe today and don't get fooled again. Order your subscription now. Go to burningspearmarketplace.com and click on Spear. That's burningspearmarketplace.com and click on Spear. Uhuru.